Welcome to the Lowdown. This is an AI-generated open-source news summary for general informational awareness. This product is not intended for use as official intelligence. The views expressed here are solely those of the cited authors and do not reflect the official policy or position of the Department of War, the United States Air Force, or any other U.S. government agency.
And with that official disclaimer out of the way, we really have a fascinating mission for today's deep dive.
We absolutely do, because by the year 2035, the U.S. intelligence community projects that the number of missile threats aimed at the U.S. homeland is going to just explode.
Right, from roughly 3,000 to over 16,000. It is a massive, massive jump.
It's staggering. So today we're unpacking this rapidly escalating, wildly complex global missile threat landscape, and we are pulling from a really deep stack of sources for this.
Yeah, we've got a June 2026 threat assessment from the Defense Analysts over at the IS. We've got detailed missile data on Chinese arsenals from CSIS.
Plus some official NATO policy documents, a few really excellent YouTube breakdowns on the actual physics of flight, and this comprehensive military read file called The Lowdown An on Ballistic Missiles, Cruise Missiles, and Overway UAS.
It's a mountain of open source information. But when you synthesize it all, the bottom line becomes incredibly clear. The threat boils down to things that are either fast, low, or just incredibly numerous.
Exactly. So I want to speak directly to you, the listener, right now. Whether you're a military tech buff or maybe you're an airman trying to understand the realities of base defense, we are going to cut through all the institutional jargon today.
Because that headline statistic, 16,000 missiles, it really represents a fundamental shift. For decades, public anxiety was, you know, mostly centered around a few massive nuclear weapons.
Right, the whole world-ending scenario.
Yeah.
But looking at the sources, it seems like the era of relying solely on nuclear deterrence is giving way to this massive conventional arms race.
Yeah. And before we get into the physics of how these things fly, we got to look at the geopolitical context. And I want to be clear, we are just impartially reporting the facts from the sources here.
Absolutely. No political sides being taken.
Right. So the 2026 annual threat assessment was released by Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard. And this stems directly from a strategic inquiry ordered in 2025 by President Donald Trump.
That was when he announced the Golden Dome Missile Defense Shield, right?
Exactly. The mandate there was simply to get a realistic, updated picture of the threats to the homeland. And the ISIGAT assessment points out that while nuclear arsenals are growing, especially China's cords, the real explosion is conventional.
Okay, let's unpack this. Is the shift telling us that adversaries are basically planning to overwhelm a defender with just thousands of conventional strikes?
That's precisely what the data suggests. China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, they are all drastically ramping up production.
Yeah.
And the U.S. DoD is matching it.
Yeah, the sources mentioned the DoD is procuring 10,000 low-cost cruise missiles and up to 12,000 Blackbeard Arrow ballistic missiles.
Which means if you are tasked with defending a base, you are looking at a terrifying logistical puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Because a 16,000 missile threat isn't just one type of weapon.
Right. You can't just build one giant wall in the sky. You need a taxonomy to understand the big picture comparison. And that low-down read file divides the threat into three very distinct categories.
Yep. Based on the specific problem they create for defenders. First, ballistic missiles, which are a speed problem.
Yeah, okay.
Second, cruise missiles, which create a detection problem. And third, one-way attack UAS, which are a mass and cost problem.
So to put that into everyday terms, a ballistic missile is basically a 100-mile-per-hour fastball you barely have time to see.
Right.
A cruise missile is a ninja sneaking through the tall grass. Mm. And the UAS is just a swarm of cheap, angry bees. Completely different physical threats.
Let's start with the fastball, the ballistic missile. The core defensive issue here is that they compress human decision-making down to a matter of minutes.
Because of the way they fly, right?
Right.
It's a rocket-powered launch followed by this huge arping flight path.
Exactly. There are three phases. The boost phase is first. It's loud, bright, powered by massive rocket engines. Space-based sensors can see that immense heat signature instantly.
But those rockets eventually burn out. And that leads to the mid-course phase, where it's essentially just coasting through space.
Yeah, and the reason it goes up into space comes down to basic physics and drag.
Mm-hmm.
To throw a heavy object thousands of miles, you got to get it out of the Earth's atmosphere.
Because there's virtually no air resistance in the vacuum of space.
Precisely. It coasts along this high arc without losing energy to friction. And you have the terminal phase, where gravity pulls it back down at extreme, often hypersonic speeds.
The physics of that reentry are wild. The technical breakdowns mention that when it's moving at Mach 10, it generates so much friction it strips electrons off the air molecules.
Creating a plasma sheath.
Yes. And that sheath can actually block radio and radar signals, making it insanely hard for defense systems to track it in those last few seconds.
It's a nightmare for defenders. And the CSIS data on the Chinese arsenal highlights this. They have the DF-21D, the carrier killer.
But the DF-26 is the one that really caught my eye. It's an intermediate range missile, so it can hit 4,000 kilometers away, like Guam. But it has this terrifying modular design.
Right, that modularity introduces a whole new psychological layer.
Mm-hmm.
Operators in the field can rapidly swap the payload between conventional high explosives and a nuclear warhead right before launch.
Which creates a massive ambiguity problem for the defender. Imagine you're an airman at a radar console. You see a DF-26 launch. You have maybe 15 minutes until impact.
And you have absolutely no way of knowing if it's conventional or nuclear.
Exactly. If you assume conventional and it's nuclear, you lose a city. If you guess nuclear and retaliate, you might just start World War III over a conventional strike.
It forces the defender into an impossible choice. But just when you think you understand that high, predictable arc of a ballistic missile, the sources bring up FOBS.
Right, the fractional orbital bombardment system. This completely manipulates the physics of the fastball.
Yeah, traditionally, U.S. early warning radars point north over the North Pole because that's the shortest flight path from Russia or China.
But China tested a FOBS concept in 2021. Instead of a standard arc, it launches a hypersonic glide vehicle into a low Earth orbit. It essentially flies the long way around.
Orbiting over the South Pole.
Yeah, and it attacks from a completely off-axis direction, totally blindsiding those north-facing radars.
It erases the one advantage defenders had, predictability.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the speed problem. But what if an adversary doesn't want to use expensive rockets? They take the ninja approach.
The Land Attack Cruise Missile, or LACM, these are basically pilotless suicide airplanes, right?
Exactly. They have a brief launch boost, then they shed it, fire up a small jet engine, and stay inside the atmosphere for the whole flight.
And the load and read file stresses their route flexibility and incredibly low altitude. They fly anywhere from 15 to 100 meters above the ground.
Which is key because of the physics of radar. Radar relies on a direct line of sight.
Right, like looking at the ocean. The Earth curves away from you. So if a radar is shooting radio waves straight out and a missile is flying 50 meters off the ground, the Earth's curvature literally hides it.
You physically cannot see it until it pops up over the horizon, terrifyingly close. An ICBM gives you maybe 30 minutes of global warning. A cruise missile could be flying for hours.
But your local warning time at the target might only be 2 minutes. The late detection is the real killer here.
It is.
But here's what I want to know. If it's flying 500 miles per hour, 100 meters off the ground, through mountains and valleys, how does it not just smash into a hillside? GPS gets jammed easily.
Yeah, in a war zone, GPS is definitely jammed or spoofed. So they use self-contained guidance like TERCOM and DSMAC. TERCOM is terrain contour matching.
How does that work in practice?
Imagine a blindfolded person navigating a room by feeling the furniture. The missile uses a downward-pointing radar altimeter to constantly measure the elevation of the ground below it.
Oh, wow. And it compares that to a 3D map stored in its memory.
Exactly. But DSMAC, Digital Scene Matching Area Correlation, is even crazier. If TERCOM is feeling the furniture, DSMA is having a photographic memory of the house.
So it's actually taking pictures as it flies.
Yes. It uses cameras to snap photos of the ground and matches them against stored satellite images in real time. It's like facial recognition, but for the surface of the Earth.
That is wild. It never emits a signal to navigate, so it stays totally hidden. Okay, so we've got expensive speed and expensive stealth. What about the angry bees?
The one-way attack UAS, the kamikaze drone.
Right. The WDON file talks about the Shahed 131 and 136 series. And compared to an ICBM, these seem almost rudimentary. They're slow, maybe 180 kilometers per hour.
And they have really tiny payloads, like 10 to 50 kilograms.
So let me push back on this a bit. If they are slow and have tiny payloads, why are they such a huge part of this future 16,000 missile threat? Why not just shoot them down?
Because of the cost exchange. It's a mass and prioritization problem. A Shahed drone might cost $20,000 to build. A single Patriot interceptor costs around $2 million.
Oh, man. So if you shoot down a $20,000 drone with a $2 million missile, you're actually losing the economic war.
Precisely. They want to bankrupt your defense budget and deplete your very limited interceptor stockpile so the heavier ballistic missiles can get through later.
But if the payload is so small, why even shoot it down? Can't we just let it hit the dirt?
You can't, because modern bases are fragile. A 20-kilo payload won't destroy a bunker, but if it hits a radar antenna or exposes stealth fighters on the flight line, it can cripple the base.
Ah, so they force you into this impossible choice. Spend your irreplaceable interceptors or let your critical infrastructure burn.
Exactly. And that transitions perfectly into understanding the end game, the payloads. Because guidance gets the weapon to the target, but accuracy is not the same as damage.
Right. And the DTIC sources point out a huge misconception here. Payload size is not the whole story. A 500-kilogram payload capacity doesn't mean 500 kilograms of explosives.
Far from it. Most of that weight is the heavy metal casing, the electronics, the fusing. The actual explosive fill might only be 20 to 30% of the total weight.
And the type of damage varies depending on the system. You've got unitary high explosive payloads for standard blast damage, but the penetrators are what really fascinated me.
The engineering on penetrators is incredible. They are designed to punch through feet of reinforced concrete to destroy underground bunkers.
But if it detonates on the surface, all the energy just goes into the air, right?
Yeah. So they use hardened steel casings to smash through the concrete. Mm. And the genius part is the delayed fusing. The electronics have to survive that massive impact shock.
Wait, they survive smashing through concrete, count down a fraction of a second, and then explode once they're inside.
Exactly. It's a highly complex endgame. You also have incendiary payloads to start massive fires and cluster munitions that scatter hundreds of bomblets over a wide area.
Which is devastating for soft targets. And speaking of complex endgames, we have to talk about MIRVs, multiple independently targetable reentry vehicles.
MIRVs totally complicate missile defense. The sources look at the Russian Sarmat ICBM. You see one rocket launch, but in space, it opens up and releases up to a dozen separate warheads.
Plus dozens of decoys, right? Like metallic balloons that look like warheads on radar.
Right. So suddenly, your radar goes from tracking one target to tracking 24 different blips, all maneuvering independently at Mach 10 toward different targets.
How does any computer system, let alone a human operator, assess and prioritize that many threats at once?
That's the whole point of an MIRV. It's designed to saturate the airspace and completely overload the cognitive limits of the defense network.
Okay, so with 16,000 of these diverse threats aimed at us, ballistic fastballs, stealthy cruise missile ninjas, and cheap drone swarms, how do we actually defend against this?
Well, the NATO documents and the lowdown read file lay out a strict integrated air and missile defense chain. It's 6 steps. Detect, track, assess, warn, engage, recover.
And if any link in that chain breaks, the defense fails. Let's look at the engage step, because active defense is literally hitting a bullet with a bullet.
Yeah, but because the threats are so different, you need a layered architecture. You can't use just one interceptor.
It's like a series of increasingly tighter safety nets. You've got the outermost layer, systems like the Arrow 3, which actually fly up into space to intercept ICBMs mid-course.
But if a threat slips past space, or if it's a cruise missile that stays low, you need the next net. Systems like TADJOD for the mid to high atmosphere.
And then the terminal point defense layer at the very end, Patriot batteries or Iron Dome systems trying to stop it at the last possible second.
But here's the most crucial takeaway from all the doctrine. No active defense is perfect. You will never shoot down 100% of the incoming threats.
Especially if they time the ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones to all arrive at the exact same moment to saturate the network.
Exactly. So because weapons will get through, passive defense is absolutely mandatory to reduce damage.
Right, the survivability onion. I love this concept. Surviving isn't just about cool lasers. It's about keeping your assets alive when the interceptors miss.
The outer layers of the onion are don't be seen using camouflage, and don't be acquired using electronic jamming against their radar.
But the inner layers are the gritty, unglamorous side of war. Don't be penetrated and don't be destroyed. It's pouring reinforced concrete for bunkers.
It's purposefully dispersing your aircraft so one bomb doesn't wipe out the whole fleet. It's having redundant comms and backup generators.
So getting down to the practical takeaways for airmen from the lowdown read file, because this isn't just theoretical. If you're an airman, readiness and recovery matter immensely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The first practical takeaway is knowing your warning procedures. We talked about how time of flight is not warning time.
Right. And OWA-UAS might be slow, but it's detected super late. A cruise missile flies for hours, but only gives you a 2-minute local warning.
Exactly. So when those alerts go off, you have to take them seriously immediately. You can't wait to see if it's a drill.
You also have to protect critical assets, disperse the equipment.
Yeah.
And if the base does get hit, the read file says you need to report hazards and support recovery instantly.
Rapid runway repair is a perfect example. A crater gets blown in the airstrip, and engineering teams are out there with quick dry cement while the dust is still settling.
So your surviving jets can still take off. Active defense buys you time, but passive defense ensures you can actually fight back.
Right.
So to recap this massive deep dive, we started with the political reality of a 16,000 missile conventional arms race. We covered the blistering speed of ballistic missiles and their compressed timelines.
We looked at the terrain-hugging stealth of cruise missiles complicating detection and the economic warfare of OWA UAS swarms stressing our defenses.
And we saw why modern defense relies on layered architectures and serious passive defense.
It really shifts the perspective. There is no magic impenetrable shield.
Which brings us to a final provocative thought to leave you with. As these offensive weapons get cheaper, faster, and more numerous,
the victor in the next major conflict might not be the nation that can throw the hardest, most technologically advanced punch.
Oh. Yeah.
The victor will likely be the nation whose infrastructure and people can take a massive hit, recover, and get back to operating the fastest.
It's all about resilience. Understand the threat, protect the mission, and recover the fastest. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.